We're joined once again by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Associate Professor of Psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. And Mitch, welcome back to The Stash.
Great to be on The Stash.
Hey, we noticed that you got recognized across the pond over in Great Britain, England, where they're having all sorts of the skunk cannabis scare going on. Why don't you tell everyone about your op-ed and what's happening there in England?
Well, they titled it Making a Hash of It, which I thought only our British friends would really understand the expression. But the bottom line is Gordon Brown wants to reclassify marijuana as a Class B drug there, which would mean it would be an arrestable offense for possession. The classification system over there is a little different from ours. Here we have Schedule 1 through Schedule 5, and Schedule 1 means no approved medical use and high danger of addiction or trouble or something like that, and oddly enough, marijuana is in that schedule here in the U.S. The British have been a little more rational about it, and they had, in 2004, moved to what's called a Class C drug there, so the policemen could essentially take your pot from you and tell you to move along and wouldn't have to waste a lot of time running down to the station, getting you fingerprinted, and basically, you know, burning half a day on something that's really not a big deal. Well, since Tony Blair did it, of course, Gordon Brown has to pretend like it's something he doesn't like, and he said he wanted to reclassify to Class B. So again, we'd be back into this horrible arrangement where poor police officers are wasting time on this, and didn't really provide much rationale. So I went to the Home Office Statistics website in the UK and found that, in fact, the percentage of 16 to 24-year-olds who reported using cannabis has dropped since 2004 in this change. And I think in part it may be just, you know, people understand the law and think it makes sense. Maybe word is out about early use in life and things like that. But clearly it's the lowest it's been since 1996. So it's not like this is just kind of some statistical fluke. This is really something that's had a really nice impact, this having cannabis on Class C. The other thing is the estimates of time saved and money saved by law enforcement there are literally in, you know, just the millions of dollars. And so,
or euros or pounds. Or
yeah, I guess, in euros, I can't even convert. And the bottom line is it just doesn't make any sense to increase the penalties on this again. Then, of course, he handpicked a crew who was going to review the idea. And most of our listeners are too young to remember, but back in the early 70s, Nixon did this with what was called the Schaefer Commission.
Right.
He grabbed a bunch of people and basically told them, go tell me cannabis is evil. And when they came back and said marijuana should be decriminalized, he, of course, had a fit like only Nixon could. And as we saw, the laws didn't get any better. And I thought, oh, great, now, you know, Gordon Brown's going to pick everybody who's a complete cannabis alarmist and put them on this committee and make it say what he wants to say. And then rumor has leaked out that they've said no, that making it Class B isn't going to be worth the effort. And so now I feel like poor Gordon Brown is really on the hot seat here. If he's going to say he really wants to do this, he's going to have to defy his very own handpicked committee in order to reclassify cannabis as a Class B drug.
So Gordon Brown, the Richard Nixon of the UK. Yeah, I was blogging on this story, and I noticed that they had said that they had a panel of 23 experts, and 20 of them said that they shouldn't reclassify to Class B, and that if he did this, if he went against his commission, he'd only be the second time a prime minister has ever done that. So he's facing some pretty long odds. But, you know, a lot of this, you mentioned how it's driven a lot by, you know, the politics of it, that Gordon Brown takes over from Tony Blair, who's from a different party. And I spoke, when I do my radio show on the weekends, my engineer is actually from London. And I spoke to him about this, and he said, yeah, that's the thing, is that Gordon Brown, you know, if Tony Blair did it, then Gordon Brown's going to do the opposite, no matter what it was.
And it's funny because, I mean, I had my own strong feelings about each of them, but here's something where the data are really on our side. I mean, you look at this thing, and they've been gathering data since 1996, and the use in that 16 to 24-year-old group is in, you know, the upper 20s, 26, 27% year after year. And now this last year it's 21%. I mean, that's, you know, clearly saying, hey, this is worthwhile, this is really helpful. And I can't imagine law enforcement can't really appreciate the idea that now they can basically just say, hey, get out of here, instead of having to burn all their time. So I think that's super. God forbid the U.S. would look at this and think, gee, saving them money, maybe we could do the same.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of this also seems to be driven by the tabloid media out there in Britain that continues to peddle the reefer madness scare stories. We keep seeing the stories of the skunk and the super skunk, the super potent, not your father's Woodstock weed that causes schizophrenia and psychotic episodes. And I know we've debunked this a number of times, but let's do it again. Let's tell everybody about this whole schizophrenia and skunk idea.
Well, and I have to give a giant tip of the hat to The Guardian for even publishing what I wrote, because they have also been sucked into the reefer madness things on occasion about the skunk weed and all of that, as all the media outlets have. But the bottom line is, stronger pot is not more dangerous pot. What happens when people have stronger cannabis is they don't smoke as much.
Mm.
Well, what a surprise. You actually have fewer opportunities for any respiratory problems under those circumstances. And this notion that, you know, it's going to make you crazy and now it's going to make you even more addicted and things like that. THC is still THC. It's just how much is in there. Now, I've had people email me and saying, man, no matter what it is, if I roll a joint, we always smoke the whole thing. Well, whose fault is that? Come on.
Well, I have a whole bottle of vodka. I better drink it all.
Exactly. You know? And the truth is, hey, once you're high, you're high. And when we look at some of the data out of University of Michigan and some stuff that Craig Reinerman has gathered at UC Santa Cruz, we find that people tend to say, you know, how high do you usually get? That's been pretty much the same over the last 30 years or so. And so if people are not getting any higher, but the pot is stronger, perhaps they're just smoking markedly less. And I think that, in fact, is a good thing. But this is another thing about having no standardized dose and no legal, taxed, and regulated market. Wouldn't it be great to go to the store and say, oh, okay, here's my 14%. I'll pay extra for it, and I'll know what to do with it, as opposed to here's the 4%, and I will make my decisions accordingly, instead of having to rely on an underground market where some guy just says, oh, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the other thing I think that throws people off and allows this scaremongering to take hold is that people don't have a mental picture of what legal marijuana would be like. And the only legal drug intoxicant picture they've got in their mind is alcohol. And certainly when we talk about stronger alcohols, the difference between beer and, say, you know, your Everclear 181 proof or Bacardi 151 or whatever it might be, is that in a situation like that where someone is drinking a lot of harder alcohol, it takes so much longer for one to realize where they're at with their intoxication level that you can suffer alcohol poisoning. And of course, the primary difference that alcohol is toxic.
You know, that's absolutely right on, Russ. And the key here is lethal dose too. I mean, people do die from alcohol poisoning. There's just, you know, not enough pot in the world. I did an estimate based on some of the animal research, and you'd have to smoke 2 pounds yourself to get near a lethal dose of cannabis. And in truth, if you've got 2 pounds and you smoke it all yourself, my undergraduates say you probably deserve to die.
Well, you should share, right? Sharing is caring. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye out there on the UK and make sure that we debunk all those cannabis skunk scare stories that come out from time to time. And Dr. Learwine, thanks for joining us again on The Stash. We'll have a link up to your UK op-ed on today's blog post. Also, let's not forget to remind people about your book, Parents' Guide to Marijuana.
So The Parents' Guide to Marijuana is now out. It's on Amazon. It looks like it's $2 off there. Also, your local bookstores have been very happy to order it. I've been really pleased with the emails I've been getting at 420research@gmail.com with questions, and people have been really nice about it. I got a couple of neat reviews up on Amazon from folks I didn't even know. So clearly it's having an impact. And I know the folks at High Times, the publishers, are also very excited about it. And I really appreciate the support from everybody at the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I give it a huge recommendation. I got my copy and was reading through it while riding the train to work at various times. And it's written in this nice conversational tone. It's not like some sort of big treatise or medical sort of document or technical document. It's written really like a conversation.
Well, I'm so glad that that appealed to you. I had written Understanding Marijuana in a more academic way, and as I was going through this book trying to make it happen, I just thought, you know, this isn't going to appeal to the folks I really want to reach, and then got the idea of doing it more as a dialogue, and it seems to have really resonated for a lot of folks. I'm really, really happy.
Well, I got to say, after reading your book, I want to meet that Alex guy.
Let him be a mystery for us all.
All right. Thank you, Mitch, for joining us again. Mitch Earlywine from the State University of New York at Albany. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me on the show.